go ahead and get started, everybody. I'd like to call the February meeting of the University Senate to order. So welcome, and hopefully you all get home safely in all the wind and the rain that we have supposedly moving in. Our vice chair said earlier, if we could only table the storm, that would be a great thing. I don't think we have that power. First order of business is to approve the January meeting minutes as posted. Can I get a motion to approve? And a second? Is there any discussion on those meeting minutes? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the minutes from the January meeting as posted, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Okay, the minutes are approved. On to the reports. I have several items for the chair report for you today. First off, there are several things that have been posted online under Senate documents, and you've seen an email. I sent out an email about that to you all yesterday or day before. One of those items is the Budget Council report from Eric Reed. The second one is the CPE, Council on Postsecondary Education, presentation to the House Appropriations and Revenue Subcommittee on Postsecondary Education. I had to write that down to remember all of that line. And I sent an email out to faculty and staff all about that as well at a request from the faculty representative for the CPE. The other two items on there from President Ransdell, one is the memo to the Board of Regents. He sent out something similar to that to faculty all. I think it was yesterday, his legislative talking points. And then the other item is something that I requested from President Ransdell at our last meeting, which was the top funding priorities of the institution. And he's listed those things out for academic year 2014-15, and I have those that memo that he sent to me posted under Senate documents as well. So all of those things are online for you to take a look at, and please do take a look at those. A few other items for the chair report. A couple of things from last Senate meeting that I wanted to make you all aware of, that I did make the SEC aware of, and we talked about some of this at some length. The Graduate Council report from last time, there was a graduate faculty policy that was approved through the SEC, passed on to Senate, and passed at Senate. That was sent on to the provost. The provost returned it to Senate and signed it and said, accepted, will pursue approval. And the provost was then going to the Council of Academic Deans to seek approval for that document. We had quite a bit of discussion about this at SEC and the fact that, you know, this had come through Graduate Council and through Senate. That at SEC, we decided then to send that back to Graduate Council with the expectation that Graduate Council was going to bring it back up in its present form. They looked at it pretty extensively in Graduate Council prior to sending that up to Senate, and of course SEC and Senate both reviewed that. So that is what has happened with that document. Always want to make you aware of things that have passed through Senate but have not gone beyond. The other item was a UCC item, and this was suspension of the Computer Information Technology Program, and the provost sent that back. He did not approve that suspension of the CIT program and had quite a bit of language and reasoning for his disapproval of that. And so I sent that back then to UCC, who has sent it back to the program for some clarification to send that back through. So those are two items from the last Senate meeting. Final two items that I have for you in my report today. In the SEC, the last SEC meeting, the governance proposal from the Ad Hoc Committee on Faculty Governance was tabled at the SEC meeting. We had quite a bit of discussion about it, and that was, you know, simply a perception of lack of interest in that item. We had had several faculty forums. We had also posted it online and had a Blackboard group, and there were only 26 faculty members, I think, that joined the Blackboard group, and there was no discussion about it. So that has been tabled in SEC with the expectation that perhaps there may be some items from that proposal that you may see again in the future. We think we like some of those items that are in that governance proposal, and we think it would be nice to adopt some of those items within our governance structure. So we imagine you'll be seeing some of those. The last item of business is actually included as an information item, but I want to bring it up in the chair report. I've included the list in the information items, and that's the Provost's Budget Advisory Committee. The Provost at our last meeting requested that four committees be formed. One of them was a key committee, the other one was a space committee, the third was on faculty award something, I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, and then the fourth one was an advisory budget committee, which was to be separate from the currently existing budget council. So the SEC requested nominations and volunteers for that, along with some information. The SEC voted on nominations, and I've posted online the list of nominations that the SEC provided to the provost. He has agreed to accept all of those nominations. By the way, that includes the two current Senate members to the Budget Council. So those two Senate representatives were automatically populated onto the committee, and then the remainder of the committee was voted on and approved by the SEC, and then has been accepted and approved by the provost. So that is the Provost's Budget Advisory Committee. So those are the items that I have for the chair report. We've got several other things, and I imagine our vice chair has a couple of notes for you probably on the upcoming elections.
Jen. I turned in the sample ballot to IT, so right now nominations are officially closed. We still are lacking in a couple of colleges. I will not call anyone out, but we're sure that we have too few nominations to fill all the seats. So it was like pulling teeth. I did finally manage to get a great pool. The ballot, the election will begin hopefully next Wednesday, is what it's scheduled to, but we're running a bit behind. It'll run Wednesday the 26th through Friday the 28th. Please be sure to vote. It is important, and stress to your colleagues how important faculty governance really is. So good luck, and to those of you who are running for a second term, I appreciate your willingness to serve.
Thanks very much, Jen. And I appreciate all the work that you put into this. It has been a lot of work to try and organize these at-large elections. So please express your appreciation to Jen, at least individually, about what she has done with this. Heidi, do you have anything to report?
There is a yellow sheet going around. If you're a guest, please sign in on the very last page. It's in a yellow folder. I think it's somewhere over here right now. And also, if you see some errors on there, could you just make a note when it comes by you? Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Costful, Molly, any report today?
Costful hasn't had a meeting for a while now, but the officers have been talking about trying to do an emergency meeting because a lot of things are going on. If that does happen, more than likely, Dr. Minter and I will not have time just to run up to Frankfurt real quick, so we'll probably meet on ITV, and we can have Margaret send out an email and invite anybody that wants to come can come. We usually do it at the ITV at Mass Media and Technology Hall. Another thing, too, is that Eastern has held the webpage for COSL for a long time, and WKU now is going to have that website, so hopefully I'll have a website up. Spring breakish. I can work on it during spring break and have a website for that, and it will be attached to our Senate. I'm sure that we can get a link up somehow or another so that we can keep up with what's going on in terms of legislation and stuff in Frankfurt. So,
excellent. Thank you very much, Molly. Eric Reed, AAUP, any report? Okay. We'll move on to our advisory reports. Regent Minter.
I'm going to start by just building on what Senator Kirby said. The statewide bodies are starting to move. We've all been watching the legislature pretty closely, and on some level, to a point, our hands have been tied, but I have some suggestions on how we can help untie that before I leave the podium. But I'm going to be participating in a conference call with several other faculty regents next week, so we are going to talk about things that are going on our campus, pool ideas, and hopefully that will help to set the agenda for faculty leadership around the state to work cooperatively, because we all have significant challenges from this cut. And I'm very glad to be working as part of that cooperative group. Funding priorities. That's posted. There are two things you absolutely have to look at. There seems to be a tendency during difficult budget times that everybody just battens down the hatches and tries to look invisible, and maybe nobody will notice you, and they'll just pass over, right? But it doesn't work that way. So I have two things to ask of you today. First, please look at the funding priorities document. That was produced by the president. That was sent to the board just as an FYI. The board doesn't act on the budget until June. There's a lot of time between now and June. So that's his vision. If you have any comments, questions, objections, whatever, I need to hear from you. So please look at the document, get in touch with me, but I am not the only person you need to get in touch with. I would like you to, when you write me, I want you to get in touch with Margaret as well, and I want you to send an email to the two members of the faculty who are on the Budget Council. The Budget Council is the one established by Vice President of Finance Ann Mead. This is not the advisory committee that the provost is establishing, which you'll vote on later today. This is the one that actually sets the budget. And when you look at the budget book next year, the names Eric Reed and Indu Chachi are going to appear in that list. So anything you send to me or Margaret or both of us, you need to send to Dr. Reed and Dr. Chachi as well. So you need to have four people in this conversation. And this, if you've got a concern, you've got to be willing to own it and bring it forward. I cannot emphasize that enough. Because this is time griping. Griping is fine. Gripe all you want, but make some, you know, turn your griping into action. Or if you see something you like, that's great too. Hey, super good idea. Please make sure that that funding priority goes forward. All feedback, good, bad, indifferent. Need that. Thank you. Secondly, the legislative presentation that the CP did is up on the Senate website, and There are a few things that all faculty can agree upon. We are a wonderful herd of cats. But I think we can all agree that it's in everybody's best interest to have the $2.5 million restored to the budget, which is the CPE's first initiative. That's the crux of their presentation. For us and other comprehensive institutions who participate in KT and KERS retirement systems, we need to have the KERS funding, which the governor has funded in his budget. We need to have that money remain in the budget. So those two things, we need you to call your delegation. You need to call your state senator if you're in Kentucky. And the only people who are getting a pass are the people who don't live in Kentucky. Everybody else, this is for you. You need to call your state senator. You need to call your House of Representatives member. And you need to tell them that you concur with the CPE's presentation. How often do we get to say that, right? Yeah, there you go. But that you concur with this. Please restore the $2.5 million. Please fund the KERS. And please support the critical capital project for the state bonding, which means there is no liability to the university budget. This is the kind we like. We want to make sure that the $48 million for Thompson Complex Central Wings, Phase 4 of the Science College, that funding stays in. And you're also more than welcome to mention the funding for Gatton Academy. That, I think, is actually going to happen. I think everybody prognosticates that's going to happen for a lot of reasons. That's a good feel-good thing for legislators to vote for. But please feel free to mention that if you wish. That's fully funded. Fully funded is always good, okay? Fully funded is always good. We don't get full funding for a lot. And a lot of that money actually ends up in the pockets of the departments that are here. So if you would do that, that would be the best single thing you can do to make sure that your work life here at WKU goes on. So if I can clarify anything, please get in touch with me, and I thank you in advance for doing this. And we need you to do this now. the next week is going to be very crucial. Okay. One more thing to follow up on last month's report. Again, a lot of you have been writing me about the Knight Commission and hoping that the Board of Regents would at some point see the great disparities in academic and athletic funding that the Knight Commission points out. I encourage everybody to look at today's College Heights Herald. There's a front page article on this very issue. And on page A2, President Ransdell gives you his answer, which is, to quote from this, "There is no good that can come from making statistical comparisons to try to prove a point." That's probably news to a lot of you in your disciplines. Anyway, that's unfortunate, and that's very unfortunate, because we actually do use a lot of statistical evidence to make points, like to the legislature. So, you know, I'm going to continue to seek clarification on this, because what we're trying to get to, it's not to call anybody out or, you know, start a rhetorical contest. It's just really to get to the true cost of all this and the true disparities. And if there's a problem with this, then let's talk about how we can internally create a better model. It gives us a better sense of this, because no matter what happens with the budget, there's still going to be some cuts this year, and we need to make sure that those are cuts that do not affect the fundamental mission of this university, which is what we do and what we do for our students. Okay? So thank you very much for those calls, and let me know if I can clarify anything for you. I will look forward to hearing from you about the funding priorities. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Mitter. And filling in for our provost today, we have Dr. Miller, who has a few things to say for us.
Well, my reign of terror begins. Just a couple of things. One, to follow up on something that Patty and Margaret said earlier, having to do with the budget council. This is the council that Gordon has asked to be established. The list, I think, as Patty mentioned, is on your website, which includes an alternate. But the plans are that this budget council will begin meeting either the first or the second week in March. So in case you're wondering when that committee will begin to meet and discuss some of the budget priorities within the Division of Academic Affairs, it's going to meet the first meeting anyway, the first or second week in March. Just to give you an update on the Senate or the SACS efforts that we're underway right now to look at our reaffirmation. The provost now has in his hands an updated draft of our document that addresses all of the standards, the requirements as well as the standards. He was going to be reviewing it over the next couple of weeks and giving us some feedback. This draft has been vetted by an internal review committee. There are some number of individuals that we identified that would be helpful to solicit their input in giving us an internal assessment of each of the standards. That committee has done its work and provided us with their assessment as to whether or not we've met the standards, some suggestions and comments as it relates to ways in which we can strengthen the document. Those suggestions and that input has been submitted back to the leadership team, the SACS leadership team. In turn, we've met with our subcommittees and given them information that we received from the internal review team so that they can revise their internal documents. We are now in the process of getting ready to send certain portions, not all of the standards, but a number of standards, to an external reviewer. There is an individual that we've identified, and we're contracting with that individual, who's a fairly well-established and experienced reviewer of SACS documents. This person is at another university. We'll be looking at our document, certain portions of our document, and giving us some feedback as well. Many institutions are recommended to hire an outside consultant to provide the information that institutions need to strengthen and hopefully make their document a bit more attentive to the standards as the SACS team has indicated. So we're going to be doing that in fairly short order, so we'll get some feedback there. So we'll keep you up to date as to where we are with the document. It's looking very good. I don't think we have any question as to whether or not we're going to be reaffirmed. I think we have every expectation that we will. In fact, when I looked at it, I think it's a stronger document than the one that was submitted back in 2005. So we're very optimistic, and we've had very good cooperation. Members of the leadership team have done a really good job. Dr. Geico has just done a super job of arranging and keeping everything on track and making sure that we're following our guidelines and following up with members of each of the subcommittees. So we feel pretty good at where we are, at least at this point. We'll also keep you up to date in the future on the status of the QEP, which is another requirement that we have to make sure that we provide to the SACS on-site team, which will be here in April of 2015. So it's not that far off. If you have any questions about our SACS preparation, where we are, certainly feel free to give me a call or Dr. Geico a call, and we'll be able to hopefully be able to answer your questions. Finally, I do want to mention something about the legislative session that's underway right now. As you know, you've heard Patty say that the legislature is in session. They are reviewing and discussing a number of issues, many of which relates to our faculty on all of the campuses. One of the issues that the House is discussing is House Bill 333. House Bill 333 changes the rules and the landscape as to who is eligible to retire and return to work at, in this case, at the universities. It has an impact on our current faculty transition program. For those of you who are not familiar with that, the faculty transition program allows our faculty to retire and then return to the university to work no more than 12 hours a year or 100 days a year. These individuals have to be individuals that are within the KTRS retirement system. The House Bill 333 is changing the rules, which would make it very difficult for faculty who are age less than 60 to retire under the faculty transition program and come back to work immediately. As of actually yesterday, we had a further clarification as to what that bill entails. We will continue to monitor it and wait to see how the Senate reacts to the bill. Actually, it was approved by the House about a few days ago. This has major implications for our faculty transition program for those individuals who are thinking about retiring under that program who are under the age of 60. Again, we'll keep you informed as to where we are on this. I'm a little concerned because this bill is scheduled to take effect July 1st of 2014. So those people that are planning on retiring under this faculty transition program that are less than age 60, we're concerned about that. So again, we'll keep you informed as to where we are and where the deliberations are, especially those that take place in the Senate. I believe that is all I have to say for the moment. Are there any questions? Yes, Eric?
Richard, will that rule also apply to administrators?
Yes. Anyone in the KTRS system that is thinking about going through the faculty retirement program. Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much, Dr. Miller. Our SGA president, Kiana Boca. Ms. Boca.
Hello, everyone. This past past Tuesday at our Student Government Association meeting, Provost Emsley joined us for a question and answer session as we were voting on a resolution to support an adoption of the Academic Affairs Policy 1.3130. It was previously passed by the University Senate, and it had two major components, which was to streamline the process of changing major requests by registering those changes only once per semester and processed promptly by the different academic units. And it would also internalize it all electronically versus how the process has been done before. And it would also require students to declare a major prior to their 60th hour of degree credit or completion of their first term of study at WKU, whichever would come first. And it was passed unanimously, and it was to contribute to increased retention levels and higher graduation rates. And we also noted in our resolution that we highly encourage the administration to further notify SGA and consult it more with policy changes, since SGA plays an important role in the shared governance of our university. Tomorrow, I will also be meeting with the Board of Student Body Presidents with other Kentucky State Student Body Presidents to just further discuss what we can do as students during this time of budget cuts and how we can further protect higher education funds. And that would be possibly doing a rally for higher education with the different universities and also having one-on-one meetings with the different decision makers in Frankfurt and other legislators. And also, just as a reminder, study abroad scholarships, scholar development grants, research, and all those deadlines for students are coming up March 1st and March 17th. So if you all have students that you would like to encourage to apply for those deadlines are coming up. And also for summer term scholarships, if any of you all teach classes or know them, that's important to encourage students to apply for those as well. And that's all posted on our website. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Boca. Let's move on to our standing committee reports and other committee reports. So we have Graduate Council.
I move approval of the January 16th Graduate Council report.
Is there any discussion on the Graduate Council report as posted? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the Graduate Council report as posted, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Beth. Moving on to Ashley and the University Curriculum Committee report.
Move approve the report from January 30th from the UCC.
Okay. What? Any discussion on the UCC report?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Department of Sociology would like to request that our proposal to revise the major in sociology be moved to the action agenda.
Okay. And I need a second on that motion to move it to the action agenda. No. Any discussion on that? All those in favor of moving it to the action agenda, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And we have another UCC item.
Pages 512, 514, and 515 of the docket. Actually, due to a typing error on those pages, under the elective, 3 hours. The following three prefixes should have been included in the parentheses. Were not. Those being E, P, R, and E, J. Advertising, public relations, and voting. Those are also additional options on the three relations.
Okay. And I'm sure you can get that to Ashley, the UCC chair, so that we have that information. Okay. Any further discussion over the UCC agenda? Okay, can we get a motion to approve as amended?
Motion to approve as amended.
All right. Is there any further discussion on UCC? Okay. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approval of the UCC agenda report as amended, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay, thanks very much. And then we'll take care of that in the new business then. Is what I understand. Or no, we need to take care of that now, don't we? That's true. Correct. We need to take, since it's moved, we need to take care of that now. Right. All right. So moving on to the sociology major change. If you'd like to go ahead and discuss the.
Sure, thanks.
I know you have a handout.
Apologize for doing this at this time, but we handed out a distributed handout everyone should have on your table. Just briefly describe what happened. We wanted to change the wording, the title of a concentration. It did not happen to the UCC. And then in the blurb here, we think that the proposed change to inequality and social change as opposed to social inequality and justice is a title that better reflects the content of the concentration. It's more in line with the work of sociologists, and it's less value-laden, and we would like to make that change this time.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on that item or any questions on that item? Okay, all those in favor of the approval of the change with the sociology major with concentration in inequality and social change, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Moving forward, academic quality has no report for us this month. Faculty welfare and professional responsibility. Tucker.
I move to approve the January faculty welfare report.
Any discussion on the report? Okay, all those in favor of approval of the report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the report is approved. Do we need to do the recommendation items separately, or since those are a portion of the report, I'm not sure that we do. Do we need to do the recommendation in the... they're part of the report, yes. Okay, just wanted to make sure. I haven't had a resolution in Senate since I've been in term, so I just wanted to make sure that that was the case. Okay. Thank you very much. General Education had no report. Colonnade Implementation Committee. It is not technically a standing committee of Senate, but we know that we will be moving towards Colonnade as of the fall, so I've gone ahead and included them in our committee reports here. So we will need a second on this, however, since it's not a standing committee. So Colonnade Implementation Committee, we do have a policy item. Is Molly here? Or is somebody from Colonnade here to propose this? Okay. And is there any further discussion on this item, this proposal to revise an academic policy from Colonnade? Okay, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed, nay? All right. Colonnade Implementation Committee proposal is approved. There is no old business on the agenda. We do have... an item of new business, which is Colonnade courses for approval. There are a number of courses that are listed there, and you have all the information that pertains to those. So, and again, Molly's not here, so yes. Okay. Is there any discussion over these? Do we need to lump those together as a... I know that's been done in the past, lump all those together, or do we just... automatically assume that they're lumped together? Okay. Because I've heard them lumped together all the courses before. Okay. So we have a motion to approve those. Do we have a second for that? Okay. And is there any further discussion over any of these courses? Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approval of the slate of Colonnade courses for approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Is there any further new business from the floor? Yes.
Rick Reeve from the at-large senator from College of Education Behavioral Sciences. I have been asked by several of my college colleagues to ask the Senate to consider the movement of South Campus faculty into main campus faculty. There are a number of issues concerning equity on both ends that they would like the Senate to consider. I don't know if I need to go into more detail or.
You might go ahead and just provide a little extra maybe for discussion.
Sure. Well, the I think some of the main points, especially for main campus folks, include different guidelines for tenure and promotion. And different guidelines for actual ability to be granted different levels. For example, within my Department of Psychology, in order to be to earn an associate professor, you need to have a terminal degree, which is a doctoral degree. And there are people within but that's not consistent with the guidelines that some of the other folks are working under. And so there is the perception that this is unfair to the current instructors in the departments across campus that don't have terminal degrees yet are not eligible for assistant or associate professor positions.
Okay. Discussion on this on the floor.
Can I speak to that?
Yes, Dr. Miller.
Talking about. What he's referring to is the decision to move faculty that are located on our South Campus to be domiciled in the actual departments. So, for example, a psychology faculty member on South Campus would move his tenure home into the psychology department or history department or any of the other departments. What he's talking about are agreements that have been made even prior to the relocation of these individuals to the main campus. The criteria for promotion for South Campus faculty has been in place for a number of years, and there are written agreements and assurances to these faculty members that we would not change the rules as to whether or not they will get tenure or what criteria that they will be held accountable for in attaining tenure. So the fact that we've relocated some of these folks from South Campus into departments that are domiciled on the main campus, we could not renege on those agreements. Those criteria have to stay in place. And so the concern that he's raised has been raised before. We've heard that before, and it's not totally illegitimate. But the fact of the matter is, we cannot change the criteria upon which we promised these individuals that they would be held responsible for to attain as it relates to the criteria for tenure and promotion. We knew this was going to be a bit of an issue, but the fact of the matter is, if a faculty member has been relocated from a South Campus department to a main campus department, we can't change the rules. We would be liable. We would be at risk. And so, yes, there are differences in criteria for tenure and promotional considerations. I think the deans understood this. The department heads understood this when they approved how we were moving these folks. So even though I think the concern has been expressed, the fact that we have an agreement, a signed agreement, that this is how we're going to handle promotion and tenure criteria for these individuals, it would be ill-advised for us to change those, and we would be at risk if we did so.
Yes, ma'am.
Lauren McLean in sociology. I just had an informal discussion with some faculty in my department about this, nothing formal. But I guess one of the things that we were concerned about, well, two issues. One is not necessarily criteria for tenure and promotion, but just in terms of workload. From our understanding, and I could be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, is that when we have someone in our department that's going to come over to our department, and that person would be required to teach, I think, four classes, where our load is typically three, but no other responsibilities. So no advising, no committee work, no publication, no research requirements. And so it seems pretty odd to us that somebody who, has tenure he definitely doesn't have a PhD, but with a master's degree, that's only teaching one extra course than the rest of us are, with no other responsibilities. It just that to me just seems a little bit odd. And I think for our department, you know, we're losing a faculty member this year to another university and not getting a replacement for that person. And so it seems like we're, you know, might be getting a little bit of the short end of the stick. And so the other concern that we had was about the agreement. Now, I haven't read any of these agreements, so I don't know. You know them way better than me. But when you have a, like, let's just say there was a department that someone had tenure in, and then that department no longer existed. That tenure, you know, you wouldn't have to keep that person's job if there's no department, right? So how are these contracts written so much that if the campus they're on or their home has changed,
well,
how is it that you can't make any adjustments?
If a department is eliminated, the efforts on the part of the university are such that we would try to find a new home for that individual before that individual is terminated, even though they may be tenured. There has to be a good faith effort on the part of the university to try to relocate that individual. In this particular case, we haven't eliminated departments per se. We've just simply moved individuals. The workload issue is totally different. There are no agreements as far as tenure and promotion criteria is concerned that relates to workload. So that if a department head, which is the individual who is primarily responsible for setting the workloads, there are no prior agreements as to minimum workloads with the faculty that have now been moved into a major department. So if a South Campus, quote, South Campus faculty member who was, oh, let's say on even a 5-5 teaching load, if the new department head wants to change that workload, they can. That's within their purview to do that. But it's the agreement that I was referring to earlier that we are legally bound to is related to tenure and promotion criteria, not workload.
Okay. Other things from the floor? Yes, Dr. Dytle?
Well, I think this is an issue where there can be honest differences of opinion. And so I hope you take my comments in that light. One, I actually applaud the university for finding a way to move these colleagues of ours from the South Campus to other units rather than eliminating those positions or firing them. That's the last thing we want the university to get a taste in its mouth of eliminating tenured faculty. They might decide they like it a little bit too much. I think the issue we're facing with is not why are these people here under different standards or different rules. I think what we should be working on is how can we raise the status and provide more security for those full-time instructors who've been serving the university well for years. Moving the folks from South Campus to the main campus departments has taken nothing away from anyone, right? Their status remains the same. The full-time instructor status remains the same. So we don't want to get it into a dynamic of, well, why do they have X when I don't have X, or why do they have Y? Let's focus instead on how can we improve the situation for the full-time instructors, who are a group that do important work, who do not have the security they deserve, nor probably the status within departments. So let's focus at that side, because frankly, the faculty moved over from South Campus, they're an anomaly. These are positions that will not continue past the retirement of these individuals. So time's going to cure those sort of what perceived inequities. But the real inequities that exist with regard to full-time instructors, those are going to be forever unless we begin to take steps about that.
Are you talking about the fact that currently instructors they don't have any mobility? Is that what you're referring to?
For instance, I think we should be creating some sort of status where you actually have tenured instructors.
Ooh.
Where you have lecturers in a department.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I know it's unusual, but we rely upon these people year after year.
You might guess, too, just to add something to what Robert said, that since I'm sort of an AAUP liaison here, that the AAUP standard is to grant tenure. to long-term instructors. That's the stance. And I think that, I've heard some of the same sort of talk about the move from the faculty South Campus to here. And I think it's a dangerous precedent for faculty to start talking about changing tenure conditions for other faculty who are also tenured. That'd be a terrible precedent. And I think that Robert's point about the inequity being too focused on our faculty who really are being, in my opinion, exploited and finding more stability for them who provide a great service to us is where we should really focus our efforts. But if you're interested, I'll send around some interesting AAUP literature that some of you may be very interested in knowing about, because the way we do tenure here just is not, especially when it comes to long-term teaching intensive faculty, it's just not up to AAUP standards, sorry to say.
Well, I think that begs the whole question as to the degree to which that discussion needs to take place, because typically here, instructor lines are non-tenure eligible lines. The same thing is true for research faculty and clinical lines are tenure eligible, but pedagogical lines, for example, are non-tenure eligible lines. What did I say? Clinical are. Let me make sure I get this straight because I'm on record. I want to make sure we don't change the whole culture of the university here as it relates to that. Pedagogical lines are tenure eligible lines. Okay. Research faculty lines are not tenure eligible lines. They are promotional lines, just like pedagogical faculty are promotional lines, but research faculty are not tenure eligible faculty. We are, and I think maybe Gordon alluded to this at the last meeting, we are talking about, and we're fairly well along the way, of giving instructors some promotional mobility. That is to say, if you haven't heard already, we are looking at establishing three different ranks for instructors. So they have some opportunity to be promoted, which I think is really good. But to move to have tenurable instructor lines begs a larger question. And not to say that we shouldn't engage in that kind of dialogue, Eric, but I think that's a much broader question that's going to have a lot of people involved, because that's a major cultural shift in how we look at tenure and non-tenure eligible lines here at the university.
Other discussion from the floor, and I know there are people outside who have comments, but we always take discussion from the floor prior to guests. So yes, Jill.
My name is Jill Brown, and I am from the department that got dismantled. I would like to clarify that we do have other responsibilities other than teaching. We are responsible for service and a lot of advising. So that is a misconception. So I just want to clarify that we do have.
Okay, yes.
I just wanted to clarify, I wasn't suggesting at all that we should have fired people or anything like that. I'm so sorry if it came off like that. I definitely did not mean that. I was just trying to clarify the contracts, and thank you for clarifying that misperception that I had heard. So I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
Other discussion from the floor? Okay, I'll take some comments from outside the floor. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify two things. One of them is that there was some reference to running tenure. I just want to point out that every person who had their tenure on the move to the main campus is actually tenured already. So there's not going to be an issue with tenure. And secondly, is still just clarify the issue of service. People have sad times in their office service. In fact, Michelle Post is here as a body.
Yes.
It's a considerable part of what they're doing. It's actually quite a lot of competition for the students. One of the issues was will they be an excellent stress and care of the field? Obviously, yes.
All right. Thank you. Comment from the floor.
Well, the idea of service actually brings up another issue that has been tossed my way, and that is the idea that we have tenured associate professors who will potentially then be sitting in on tenure decisions on people under them who have different qualifications. And the question is whether that's fair and equitable on either side.
Well, I think that we have to be careful about creating a situation where we have second-class citizens. Again, sometimes we allow departments, again, at the local level to determine who, in fact, is eligible to sit on various committees, but I would strongly caution a department from making a decision to eliminate a tenured assistant or tenured associate professor who was relocated into the department from the South Campus, excluding that individual from what ordinarily an assistant tenured assistant associate professor in the department would be eligible to perform. So I think we have to be very careful about treating individuals differently as to whether or not they'd be eligible to sit on certain committees within a department.
I'm not suggesting that we limit that. What I'm suggesting is that when that happens, it's going to be very awkward on both parts. And I guess the frustration comes is that it's been questioned whether some of these things were thought through or this was just a reaction that came
about.
It
may not have been thoroughly thought through. I mean, one of the things that happens from time to time is you make a decision and all of a sudden, the more you start looking into it, you start saying, "Oh, I didn't really think about that before we leaped."
It's one of the reasons you bring it to the faculty, yeah. So the faculty will bring up those items.
That's not unusual.
I have over here, and then I'll guess.
Hi, this is Eric again. I'll be, I guess, frank and direct because I've been thinking about these issues a lot in the last few days. One is that every department has rules about tenure. And every faculty member who votes has to follow them. The other thing to keep in mind, so to consider this some kind of like Wild West free-for-all of tenure voting is just something that's not true. And second of all, every faculty member who is granted tenure, in the case of my college, if say you're in the sociology department and you're up for tenure, you're going to have a history PhD, an astrophysicist, and an EDD evaluating your tenure eventually. So this idea that only people with expertise in the field are involved in, and terminal degrees in the field are involved in that tenure decision process is simply not true now.
Okay, and I know I had, yes.
Mike Smith from biology. I think there needs to be some discussion about distinctions between instructors and
Patty, if you know.
Did a really outstanding job on this, and this would have been three Senates ago. And faculty welfare looked at the pedagogical faculty issue for a very long time, raised a lot of excellent questions. They spent almost a year on this, and everything that they reported is documented on the Senate website. So I would encourage people to go look at that. And every one of these issues came up because the instructor issue was very much in play at that time. And as established, the pedagogical faculty lines are new lines. Departments have to apply for them. If an instructor wanted to apply for one of those positions, they could. But they're it's not a blurry line at all. It's in the faculty handbook, and it's clear as a bell, and the rules are extremely clear. So one of the things I think we can all do is try to educate ourselves on this so that we don't have misperceptions that, you know, cause difficult working relationships. And I believe me, I've heard a lot about this in the last couple of weeks, and I think that's part of it is, you know, there are some genuine equity issues on this campus, which I think have been addressed. But I think there are also a lot of misperceptions. And, you know, well, I heard that. And, you know, these are things that cause very difficult feelings. And I'd like to reiterate what my colleagues have said in defense of tenure. You know, when you breach the tenure line, when you start laying off tenured faculty, you've crossed a line that is so dangerous and there's no going back. So I would encourage you all, and I know that some of these situations are very difficult, but try to think about this as a solidarity issue, because when you lay off tenured faculty, you've opened the door in a difficult budget climate to cut entire departments. And, you know, the old story that, you know, when they came for me, there was no one to, you know, to speak. So please try to bear that in mind. But go back and look at the records, look at the faculty handbook, and that answers questions. And if it doesn't answer every question, then certainly governance is the appropriate forum in which to raise this. And I'm glad that we're talking about it.
Yes, ma'am. Microphone. And please remember to use the microphone as you comment.
Sonia Lang, Modern Languages. I'm all for the solidarity issue. My concern is if, for example, in our case, we're having somebody from Southern Campus who has a master's degree. In our department, for example, with a master's degree, you cannot teach over the language class, over the language classes. What about the content classes? So all things being the same, is there a sex issue here? Is this an internal policy from the university, or how do you address those kind of issues?
Those are discipline-specific issues. Those are issues that have to be resolved at the departmental level. We're not prescribing how a department determines as to whether or not a person is qualified to teach a certain level of courses. That's something that pretty much stays within the department and within the college. Again, I think we have to be careful about equity, and we have to ask those questions. Is this equitable? Again, we have to refrain from the possibility of even creating the impression that we are treating folks that are coming from South Campus into departments on the main campus any differently. And so if the department has a policy or a regulation as to who is able or eligible to teach certain courses by discipline, that stays within the department. There's nothing that, you know, we do at the provost level that can prescribe. So, again, the issue is fairness and equity, and that's the one thing that I think is an overriding factor that we're concerned about.
I'm happy to address that. I checked the discipline-specific memos for every department that we were planning to do this case, and none of the discipline-specific memos
any other comments from the floor? And then, yes, ma'am.
Hi, Michelle Hollis. I am a South Campus faculty member. I'm also assistant dean of University College. A couple of different things. Mr. Grieve, from psychology. I was married to Quentin for 19 years. I'm pretty confident to say that he will do a good job of reading your tenure and promotion documents and making sure that everything follows through accurately. And I think that it's safe to say that all of our faculty members who've moved into your departments will read your guidelines, and if they're voting on your tenure, they will vote according to your documents. It was not a knee-jerk decision. We had thought it through. What happened in the liberal arts and sciences department is we had 12 faculty members in 10 different disciplines, so it was no critical mass for any one discipline, so this was a good time for them to move. Our other department will stay on South Campus because we have, I think, 8 full-time math people, 6 full-time English people, so we do have that critical mass. And we are the 6th largest department on the campus, so I don't think that we will be infiltrating math and English. The other thing was We do everything that you all do except research. The only thing that we're not required to do is research and publish. Some of us do research, some of us do publish. We're just not required to by our contracts. I'm thankful that the university did allow them to keep their rank and tenure, because those were the guidelines that we applied for the positions under, and so it's a good thing that they can keep those things, and it should not be taken away from them. They should not be treated as second-class citizens in your departments. I've worked closely with all of these faculty members, and I can say that they're all going to do a good job. They may not teach any of your courses, because part of their contract is that they are required to teach up to 12 hours a semester in the Cornerstone program, which is on South campus. So their teaching load may not change at all. If we have enough courses to staff them on South Campus, then you won't have them infiltrating into your courses. So please respect them. Please treat them as equals. You get to know them. They're a great group of people. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the floor or from outside? Yes, ma'am. Microphone. Yeah, you can use the one from the table.
I'm an instructor on the main campus, and I really respect all of the discussion about this idea of second-class citizens, and I think that the elephant in the room is that there already are second-class citizens at the university, and those are the people who are not tenure eligible. And I think that some of the discussion here has gotten off track, thinking about terminal degrees or not, because I believe that there are some faculty that are coming over from South Campus who have appropriate terminal degrees for their discipline. Some instructors on the main campus have terminal degrees, but the issue here is that there are people who are doing the same job on the main campus but don't have the same respect because they're not tenure eligible. And what can we as an institution do to remove that bias against people who are not tenure eligible? How can we elevate the other people in the department following the same path that we're already on by incorporating people who provide an incredibly important service at the university? How can we continue that trajectory that we're already on the right path? What's the next step to helping the instructors have the same kind of security and respect at the university?
Thank you. Dr. Miller?
Well, again, I think it begs a much broader question and a need for a much broader dialogue. The University Senate, I think, has to obviously get involved with this. If we're talking about creating tenure-eligible instructor lines, that is a major departure from what this institution has been following for many, many years. Not to say that that isn't something that the institution should consider, but that is going to beg a much broader conversation than what we can, what we can have here today. It involves board. Obviously, the Board of Regents has to determine whether or not there is a sufficiently compelling proposal coming from the president, because it has to come from the president, to change the culture and have us institute a professorial rank that includes tenure-eligible instructors. And so, again, not to say that that isn't possible, but it is a situation that's going to involve many, many more people, go through the committee structure that we currently have, present a compelling case for instituting tenure-eligible instructor lines.
Thank you. Is there any more discussion? No, there's been a lot of discussion on this issue, and this was something that the Senate did not see prior to it coming into being. So this is really the first time the Senate has had to talk about this issue, and I appreciate all the discussion today. I don't know if this is something, and I can't propose this, so I'm just kind of saying I don't know if you guys want to do this. If this is something that you all would like to see a Senate Standing Committee look at in more detail or think about in more detail and have some discussion and do some research about, maybe in discussion with AAUP and how AAUP deals with things, I don't know. I'm just going to throw that out there and see if anyone wants to consider that in further. And if not, we'll move forward. Okay. are you suggesting that as a, I mean, truly, or, I mean, I don't know, people. I think, I mean, that would be fine, academic quality or an ad hoc committee. If people are interested in discussing this, we've had a good amount of discussion about this today, and I'm not sure we've ended the discussion as far as what the university may need to move toward. I don't know. Was that a motion or?
Well, we have representatives from two colleges who are asking the Senate to consider this, so mm-hmm. Why don't we have an ad hoc committee to consider it?
Why don't you just suggest you go to faculty welfare, which is the group that looks at pedagogy?
Faculty welfare?
That'd be fine.
Okay.
And that's the group that did all the work on pedagogy.
Tucker, you guys have had a lot of work this year.
Can I just make one other comment, Margaret?
Okay.
Personally, it's disturbing if we have faculty that hold the rank of instructor and have been here for a number of years feel that they are disenfranchised. That's what I'm hearing. If that's kind of a prevailing view, that's something that we really need to address.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd like to point out that we're forgetting an entire population of faculty. I'm lucky because my home department is very supportive, but we have three regional campuses with faculty who have instructor rank, tenure track, who are almost always forgotten or overlooked in these conversations. So I think that if faculty welfare is willing to take this on, that they should make sure they have the regional campus voices as well, because they do a lot of work and nobody ever sees them.
Thank you, and that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yes, yeah, you just got that. Yes, Eric.
Well, okay, then what I'll do is I'll move that we simply ask faculty welfare to look into this general question of, the questions that have come up today. I don't even want to try to frame what the question is.
Yeah, we've had a lot of questions today, so can I get a second on that? Okay, thank you very much. That was Rick Grieve. All those in favor of sending this to faculty welfare, Tucker, thank you very much. Faculty welfare and professional responsibility to consider, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you very much, and thanks for the discussion. Thank you, Tucker, in advance. we do have any more new business from the floor? Everybody goes up. Information items. We do have a couple of items, please. Two things. The proposed IT policies. We saw these at the November Senate meeting. We had quite a discussion over these items and recommended that several changes be made. A number of those alterations or changes have been included in these revised copies that were posted on the agenda. There are a couple of items that I'd like to point out to you that are not in this, and I did send an email out to the full Senate in pertaining to, in particular, the one issue which had come up last time, which is the general counsel and having some sort of a public record or log of the general counsel's request. Any requests that happen so that there is transparency that's at the institution. Bob Owen responded, and I'm sure hopefully you all saw that email and said that, you know, that's not an IT issue, but if the Senate would like to take that up with general counsel, then, you know, please have at it. So if you all would like to, and I didn't hear from anybody via email, if you all would like to, I know this was a pretty hot issue at the Senate meeting in November, if you all would like to take this up and consider this, then now would be the time to say something about it and consider perhaps what the Senate is going to say in response to the IT policies that have been proposed that are moving through and what kinds of things we think might need to be adjusted in response to that. Yes.
Well, for some reason, this is Mark Reeves, SGA Senator. I'm not entirely sure why. I don't think SGA received those emails because I was not privy to that response by Bob Owen, but my response to that would be, if that's not an IT policy, why is it in the IT policy? But I would also request that he speak with the general counsel to...
He says he did, but that it's not something that IT could handle, and that he recommended that if the Senate was interested in it, that we take that on.
That would be my guess. Is there any way we can summon the general counsel? because I personally would like a response on this question, and it's something that has generated student interest, and the student body, at least as a part of this body, would like a response from the pertinent body, whoever that may be.
Okay. Is there?
I don't exactly know what the procedure here would be.
Perhaps. Yes, Eric. We can request that. Okay. We can certainly request that. Can I get a second on that motion? All right. All those in favor of requesting that the general counsel come and speak to Senate about this issue, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Thank you very much. I will make that request and let you all know what comes of that and keep you informed. And Mark, I'm not sure why you're not on the Senate list, so I'll try and figure that out. Dick was the second. And then the last information item was SEC nominations, and hopefully you all took a look at that list of SEC nominations for the Provost Budget Advisory Committee. There were a number of individuals for that, and our final list, Eric Bain Selbo, Indu Chachi, Tucker Davis, Klaus Ernst, John Gottfried, Guy Jordan, David Keeling, Harold Little, Tony Norman, Eric Reed, Beverly Segris, Michelle Trawick, and we had an alternate of Tom Hunley. And so that is our list for it's the Provost Budget Advisory Committee. Remember, that is a separate thing from the university's budget council. So this was the provost requested committee that we're filling out here. So any comment about those? Okay. Is there anything further? I know everybody wants to get out here before it starts to rain, so is there a motion to adjourn? And all those in favor, please stand up. Thank you very much.